It's Sunday night, and that means from high above beautiful Lake Osceola down in Jefferson Valley, New York, the John Mack Radio Show is on the air. Good evening. This is John McMullen welcoming to the 123rd episode of the weekly John Mack Radio Show. The URLs for the previous 122 shows may be found at www.johnmack13.com. And John Mack is J-O-H-N, that's johnmack13.com. Under the radio show tab and at my email address, which I will mention the number of times during the show, is johnmack13@gmail.com. My most recent piece for the Westchester Guardian is at website www.westchesterguardian.com. That's W-E-S-T-C-H-E-S-T-E-R, guardian.com. It includes the 192nd column, the Creative Disruption Series, and I welcome comments to my email page. Next week's guest will be musician, songwriter, and singer Fred Gilliam Jr. But now to this show, the 123rd in the series, as I mentioned, callers may call in at any time during the show by dialing 646-716-9756. That's 646-716-9756. My guest is Dr. Joseph Nyer. Dr. Nyer is the 8th president of Iona College, my alma mater, and is the first non-Christian brother of Ireland to serve in that position. A bit of disclaimer, my brother, an Irish Christian brother, was in the first entry class of Iona in 1940, and his name is on the statue on the campus commemorating that class. He returned to campus 10 years later as a member of the faculty, then later taught me for 2 semesters. I received 2 A's and he turned me out of class once, and I didn't tell my mother. To this seems my wife, Barbara, is a member of the adjunct faculty that I own. Now let's get on with the show. Welcome to the show, Dr. Nyer.
John, it's a pleasure to be with you and always good to be speaking with an alum.
So let's start right at the beginning. Where'd you grow up, then go to early school?
I grew up in southern Wisconsin, in Beloit, Wisconsin. And I was the first in my family to go to college. And I can tell you, like many of your listeners, that it was a Catholic high school experience that set me on the course to higher education. And I went into the Navy right after high school and then went on to undergraduate at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse and graduate schools at the University of Missouri, University of Kansas, and then completed pre- and postdoctoral studies at Harvard Medical School.
Did you think early in life of becoming an educator?
Absolutely not. It wasn't until I entered college, and I think many of your listeners and you as well had the same experience, that higher education opens so many doors. It opens the mind and opens the doors and changes destinations, and I'm pleased that I had wonderful mentors like I find at Iona College that helped change my destination, and then here I am so many years later.
One concern I have since you brought it up is that so many families now seem to take college as a trade school, direct preparation for a particular job. Now, back in the day, as they say, when I went to Iona, I didn't have much of a clue what I'd be doing, but I knew that I needed an education, and at that time, other than the accounting school that Iona was always well known for, it was basically the liberal arts college, and there were English majors and there were history majors, and many of us wound up doing other things, but we had that education to draw on. I've taught at NYU and at Marist and at SUNY Purchase now, And many of the students who come in expect to already be on a career path. They're not concerned. Do you find that?
I think you're putting your finger right on the mark. So we know that students upon graduation are likely to change careers up to 7, maybe more times. And if we're simply preparing them for their first job out of college, we're doing them a disservice. And the value of a liberal arts education coupled with learning essential knowledge that may be akin to one's discipline is incredibly important. And we know that students graduating today are going to be working in jobs 10 years from now that don't exist today. So again, if we were simply about preparing them for the first job, we wouldn't be preparing them for a life well lived and careers that will come along 10 years from now. And I think that's what's so very special, especially about the size of the College of Iona College, with our mission, but also with our strong liberal arts core that every student receives, regardless of their perceived discipline at the beginning of their college career.
In my field, technology, it's 2.5 years. I have one of the videos I show my students. To one of the point that it makes is that things you were taught in your freshman year in a technical field by your junior year, half of them will be obsolete. And so I try to lean on them that they must have both the broad picture, and they must also have the nit picture. They must have to have the detail to hold a job, but to have a career, they have to understand the broad picture of what's going on.
That's exactly right.
And so it's interesting. Your professional life beyond education, I'm talking about formal education, we obviously go on forever, seems quite different from what we normally see in an incoming college president. Oh, would you take us back to your progression from the PhD to Iona?
Sure. So I attained my doctorate from the University of Kansas and went to Baylor University, where I founded their Evaluation Services Center and was offered tenure after 1 year, which in higher education is pretty rare. And Harvard Medical School contacted me and asked me to come back in a faculty capacity because I had studied there in their pre-doctoral program. And I was at a crossroads. My wife and I had one child, and we were offered tenure at Baylor University in Texas, and we had to make the difficult decision. Do you take the road less traveled? Do you succumb to the path of least resistance? And ultimately, we elected to go back to Boston, and where I assumed the directorship of the medical coping program at Harvard Medical School Children's Hospital. And my wife and I, my young daughter at the time, lived in Boston. And after Boston, we were recruited to Illinois, where I joined the faculty then at the University of Chicago and became the president and CEO of the Hope Institute, which was a multi-pronged university-affiliated nonprofit that provided direct services to children and their families through clinics, schools, and residential treatment centers, as well as had a training arm and a social policy arm. And I was their president for 8 years, and during that time I knew I was going to come back fully to higher ed as a college president, but wasn't quite sure where. And I knew I wanted to go to a faith-based institution, and I'm Catholic, of course, and Iona recruited me, and I met the people of Iona and met their board and met the faculty of Iona and knew that it was a great fit. So about 5 years ago was when I began meeting with their search committee, and I'm in my fifth year as president now, and my wife and I and our four young children couldn't be happier to be living on Iona's campus in New Rochelle and being a full part of all the Iona community brings to the greater greater Southern Westchester and New York metropolitan area.
That's terrific. I know that you made major contributions in the study of autism. Do we fully understand autism yet? And if not, why do we not?
We don't fully understand autism to this day. We historically have diagnosed autism by the behavioral traits exhibited by children, but more and more we're learning more about the genetic contribution, environmental contributions of autism. And understanding more about the causes of various forms of autism helps us understand better treatment modalities. So while we're better at diagnosing earlier, while we're better at intervening, while we're conducting more and more research, we still have much to learn about autism. And I was pleased to have dedicated so much of my professional and research time to the field of autism and to their families and to trying to advance social policy and legislation across the country that would better support children and their families. And I appreciate you raising that because it is a very important part of how I spent much of my professional life.
I know some parents of autistic children, and I was, and they always referred to them, they were both a rather high performance, and they referred to them as, at that time, as Asperger's. Now, I understand that they've dropped that designation. What was that all about?
Back to diagnosing children based on behavioral characteristics, the differences between what we formerly knew as Asperger's syndrome and high-functioning autism was whether or not there was a significant language delay prior to age three, if I recall. When the DSM was reclassified and experts came together, they opted to no longer use the term Asperger's syndrome. But again, it was high-functioning children who did not have a language delay. And again, the majority of children with autism have often moderate to severe cognitive impairments. And so it's those children as well as high-functioning children with autism that we must spend so much time researching and learning how better to intervene as a country and as medical practitioners.
The concern that these parents have, and I'm sure it's of any parents of children with any kinds of disability, is they could guide them and they could provide a home and caring for them. What would happen after they died? Now, do we have decent support for things like that now in the country, or do we still have a lot of work to do?
Certainly our country is growing and becoming better at offering services to an adult population, but we have much work to do. And advances in early intervention have been wonderful. We have much more work to do with early intervention and early detection. However, we also know that there is a large number of children turning the age of majority who have been diagnosed with autism, and our adult service system isn't as robust as the child service system, including schools, etc. So we have much work to do on the system of care for children and their families with autism and for adults with autism, and I'm pleased that there are so many groups working to advance both social policy and legislation, and we have a wonderful one right here in New York, Autism Speaks, that plays a pivotal role in advancing social policy and legislation to better support children and adults who have autism.
You mentioned that you knew that you wanted to be the college president, but after so much time and achievements, as you mentioned, in the field of mental health, what attracted you to a college presidency where you'd have to give up some of that work?
Certainly, whether you're leading a nonprofit university-affiliated institute or leading a college, you see it as a life of service. And I believe every 8 to 10 years in a life of service, you have to really spend a serious amount of time in introspection, thinking about how best to support others. And I believe that colleges and universities in our great country play a pivotal role in not only forming and supporting democracy, but in advancing the lives of its students who then go on to become great alums like you. And that was through that introspection that I decided that I had spent an awful lot of time focused in one area, and I wanted to spend the next decade plus of my life serving in higher education. And we do, again, view this as a life of service and are so proud of all that Iona accomplishes and its alums that it seemed like a very natural fit and a very natural next destination for us.
I noticed from your Facebook page and other writings your exhortation to the sport teams, Go Gaels, do seem to combine both the persona of both the school's number one administrator and the number one Iona cheerleader. Do you see yourself in those terms at all?
To be honest with you, I do. I know our student athletes and I know our students, and I live on the campus, and I'm present, or I like to believe that I'm present in their lives, and I believe they know who I am most of the time. I'm the guy in his middle years that says hi to everyone moving through campus. And student athletes, especially at the Division I level, you know, their successes and their challenges on court or in the field of play are very public, and I think it's an awful lot of pressure, and I'm very proud of our young men and women, and I am a big supporter, and again, I believe in them as people first, students second, and athletes third, but I support all of their accomplishments, just like I do our other students who go on to do great things academically and in research and in service and mission trips around the globe. But yes, I am a big cheerleader of our student athletes and our students in general.
There was commentary in some newspapers after the men's basketball team's loss to Rider, blamed by someone on a suspension of a team star from the game because of his action after the previous game. Was the suspension decided at the academic department level, or did it reach you? And whether it did or not, would you comment on it?
Our athletic director, Rick Cole, phenomenal athletic director, works with our coaches to make those decisions. I was fully aware of the circumstances and that would be happening. And I think it was the right decision. And ultimately, you know, we're here to ensure that our students and our student athletes learn and in advance. And again, I'm quite confident that that's happening in all aspects of student life on campus.
My guest on the show last week, Neil Judge, was the former athletic director at Mercy College. He'd been out of the job for a number of years, but he agreed that it's the role of the athletic department to ensure that athletes understand sportsmanship. And I think I agree with him, and Neil agreed with him. Do the first president that I own not to be the member of its founding religious order, what impact, if any, does that history have on you?
It affects me greatly, and it affects me every day. And when I was inaugurated, I shared with the Iona community that this transition to a non-Christian brother president would be a big transition for the college, and that it was upon all of us to ensure the Christian brother's legacy guides our future. On my first day in office, I asked that Brother Driscoll's desk be brought over from Driscoll Hall, and I sit behind his desk. And I have Brother Liguori's negotiating table in my office in the hopes that both of those traits from both of those men would permeate my time. I'm very purposeful. I have great respect for the brothers. I have a Christian brothers advisor, and I'm very pleased that the brothers live on our campus and that their legacy does, in fact, guide our future. But it is something that's on my shoulders. I think about it often. And it guides a lot of my decision making. And many times I will go to the brothers and ask them for their advice. And the brothers are great advisors. And I'm grateful that they're in my life. And again, that they're so involved in the life of the college.
Brother Liguori's last official act as president was presiding at the baccalaureate mass that I was there as my 50th year. I was one of the students, and you were there as the person coming in. Then we had this terrific dinner and presentation over at the Yacht Club. That was a wonderful night. The previous guest on this show, the retiring president of Marist College, Dr. Dennis Murray, was in a similar position. He succeeded Linus Foy, who had left the Marist sort of while president, but remained in position for a while. Dennis has always, in his public addresses, referred to Marist as continuing in the tradition of the Marist brothers. Do you do a similar thing in relation to the Christian brothers?
Well, first let me say I want to congratulate Dennis Murray on a remarkable presidency and an incredible trajectory for Marist. And I have great respect for Dennis, and I know that you know, in his final year that he's been a remarkable part of the search, and he's iconic both in the MAC and in the Lower Hudson Valley. As it relates to the Christian Brothers, we define ourselves as a Catholic college, and our founding order is, of course, the Christian Brothers, and we refer to ourselves as the only Irish Christian Brothers college in the United States. So it is who we are, it's how we define ourselves, and it's also part of our Catholic identity that is so robust on campus. So yes, we define ourselves by the brothers and by our Catholicity, but also by the Catholic intellectual tradition, which just has us welcome all faiths and all belief systems as children of God into an intellectual community that's so very focused on the future and service to others. But to answer your question in a long-winded way, I'll answer with simply by saying yes, that the Christian Brothers is a significant part of our identity, and we do define ourselves that way.
I was very familiar with the Christian Brothers because my brother was a Christian Brother for 25 years, and he was, at the time that they transferred you, whether you liked it or not, he left Siona and he became the principal of Palm Memorial when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was still Lew Alcindor there. So he had an interesting life there. It's interesting speaking about Dennis. As you probably know, Marist was way ahead of other schools in the technology area because of the deal they cut with IBM years ago, and they've been a test bed for IBM. And Dennis had told me once that when he came to Marist, he was one of the people on the board, or the friend of his with Brother Driscoll, who advised him to move into technology. And Dennis wasn't quite sure why the liberal arts college would have to do that, but he did. And within 2 years, they were the leading technology college in the area. So he owed some of that to Brother Driscoll.
And Brother Driscoll at Iona College had a focus on technology that was carried on by Brother Liguori, and we were one of the early adopters of integrating IT in our library. And when we built our new library, we merged IT and library on our campus, and have been launching new academic programs. In fact, just in the last few years, we've launched a cybersecurity program and a new program in game development, all critical aspects of ensuring that students are gaining both the liberal arts education, but also majoring in areas that are vital for the future of the country, but also significant areas of interest for them. So I think Brother Driscoll had a vision and impacted more than one college, both by your story and the stories of many others.
The purchase of the land across Main Street from the college and the building of the old college diner space is the most noticeable expansion of the college under your tenure. But Iona has expanded in many ways other than new degree program, new partnerships, the greater presence abroad. Let's go through them. The residence hall. How did that come about, and the decision to purchase that whole block and everything?
So a number of things. One is we've expanded the main campus land assets by about 25% to 30% in terms of contiguous land, which includes the blocks that are adjacent to the campus in the Beachmont neighborhood, and then many of the properties on North Avenue. Those acquisitions were made as part of a campus master plan we put together about 3.5 years ago. We believe we've acquired about as much land as we need for the foreseeable future. The reason we were acquiring land is because we wanted to ensure that we were able to grow and improve North Avenue in tandem with the city. And we engaged in a year-long process with community leaders, neighborhood associations, to hear where there may be common ground and to hear how best Iona could continue to be a good neighbor to its good neighbors. And all groups agreed that it would be wonderful. This is the second residence hall we've built since I've been here. We built East Hall on the hill looking down on Spelman. It was agreed by all, by community members, by City Hall, and by our campus officials, that if we could build the next residence hall on North Avenue, it could serve as a revitalization mechanism for that part of North Avenue, and also would ensure that that the other parts of the residence hall, like the first floor commercial, the restaurants, the merchants, etc., would benefit the community. So many of the restaurants up and down North Avenue, including the restaurant that'll be in the new residence hall, are on the college's meal plan. It's very different from when you went to Iona. Students walk down up North Avenue, can eat at most of those restaurants, swipe their student ID, and we support those restaurants, and our students do, by being on the meal plan. So the residence hall on North Avenue came about from community planning and from our campus master plan, and it'll open this coming August, and it'll be 7 stories with commercial on the first floor and 6 stories of apartment-style living for 315 students. It's one of our biggest building projects in the last decade, and we'll add taxable square footage to North Avenue by way of the commercial enterprise on the first floor and ensure that 315 more Iona students have a place to call home.
I misspoke before. I called it Main Street, and it's, of course, North Avenue. Now, will that restaurant then be in competition with the Beachmont, which is one of my old stomping grounds, even when I was – when the drinking age in New York, when you were still in Wisconsin, the drinking age in New York was 18, so you could move right into the Beachmont, the freshman. So will they be in competition, the restaurant with the Beachmont?
Gemelli's, the Beachmont, and several restaurants up and down North Avenue certainly compete with one another for our student businesses. And it's that competition that I think keeps the menus fresh and the service so strong. And, you know, those that have the best service and the best food to offer typically are the ones where students spend the majority of their time. So I think a healthy competition, but I think that there's enough room, of course, because the diner used to be on our meal plan too, for a new restaurant to open at the location of the diner that that students will certainly frequent without severely or negatively impacting the other businesses in the area.
It's interesting, Tony, you mentioned the working with the city and the neighborhood. Some residents of the city thought at one time that the relationship between Iona and the city bordered on the adversarial. Iona just did what they wanted. I don't know how accurate that feeling was, but apparently that's not the relationship now.
Well, certainly all colleges have town-gown relationship challenges. There are certainly areas where there's common ground where everyone benefits, and there's certainly times when living next to a college is less than desirable. That happens in every community. I think what's special about Iona is we're in our 75th year. It's a big year for the college, 75 years of Iona College, and certainly the college was much smaller and much different 75 years ago or 60 years ago. And there are many residents that live near campus that remember a very different Iona. And I think we have to be respectful of the fact that they remember a very different Iona. And again, work hard to find common ground. We can't always find it. But in the words of Brother Driscoll, we're trying to be good neighbors to our good neighbors. And I hear a lot of positive from our neighbors. And I also hear some of the things they view as challenges. And again, to the extent that we can be supportive of both New Rochelle and Southern Westchester, we're very happy to do so. One thing that relates to this is it's not well known to many, but Iona is the second largest private employer in the city of New Rochelle. And so in addition to our intellectual and our civic contributions, we also have a significant economic contribution that I think is so very important, especially since the Great Recession. I think that the appreciation for the number of employees we have as well as the number of students that enjoy all that New Rochelle brings to the fore is very beneficial to New Rochelle at large.
I didn't realize, I was up at Iona when the book was rolled out on the history of Iona, and I was speaking to Brother Joe Cousin, who I went to both high school and to college with. I didn't realize that 33 Beachmont, when my brother had lived, had burned down.
Yeah, they burned down a year ago, April. They had a fire on the third floor, electrical fire. Thankfully, nobody was hurt. It occurred during the day rather than in the evening. And that's a home owned by the college as well. It certainly was a home to Joe Cousin for many years. So we have a common friend in Brother Cousin, a wonderful man.
Yeah, as I said, my brother had lived there when he was on the faculty. He also lived on Pryor Terrace for a while. What's replaced? Has a residence hall replaced 33 Beachmont?
It was so severely damaged, we had to take it down. So it is all green space, and I think that it's a beautiful part of campus. And now it's in front of the Edmund Rice Chapel and creates a space both for worship and for faculty to gather with students on a nice spring or fall day to enjoy the beauty of the mind with the beauty of the with the beauty of the campus, but it's a green space for us now.
You mentioned the chapel. Brother Glory was kind enough to have a memorial mass for my brother after he passed away. I was very grateful for that. I also understand that under your tenure, the number of new degree programs have opened up. Do you want to go through some of those?
Yeah, I'd like to highlight a few of those, and a few of them I think bridge our conversation about growth of the campus, because Holy Family is a wonderful partner with Iona College, and we opened a speech-language pathology graduate program, and it's a remarkable program that has a clinic that serves the community, and we didn't have the space on campus to launch that graduate program, so in partnership with Holy Family, we renovated a significant portion of the first floor of the old school at Holy Family, and our campus is now inclusive of Holy Family. And in partnership with Holy Family, we also moved our Sunday night liturgy to Holy Family. And I think it's a wonderful way for Iona students to be with community members in worship. And I think it's great for the community to see our students in that light. So the new speech-language pathology program is a new academic program for the college that comes with expansion of the campus. We have a new environmental studies program. We have a new game development program, a new program in cybersecurity, a new graduate program in project management. The list is quite long, and it mirrors, again, this increased focus on learning at Iona College, new academic programs, a revitalization of our core curriculum in the liberal arts. We've been recruiting top faculty to both carry out those new programs and to carry out the curriculum, and they join a wonderful faculty of very dedicated teacher scholars. We have Dr. Sung Hee Lee, who's a new professor, well, relatively new, but she's a top 10 rising chemist in the country, and she chairs our chemistry department. And each year we welcome new faculty, and we're invested in ensuring that we have a strong faculty, a strong curriculum, and a growing portfolio of academic programs that, rooted in the liberal arts, prepare students, again, to live that life well-lived. And that's happening every day at the college, and it's a remarkable list of programs and list of new faculty that I don't claim credit for. I think we have a wonderful faculty that helps plan, through shared governance, those new developments of the college.
You mentioned faculty. One of the, and I'll get into this later, the concern about the cost of higher education, but one of the complaints that that people have are that the growing, a large percentage of adjunct professors that people see as a cost containment measure. Should we be concerned about the fact that 60% and 70% of college professors are adjuncts?
I think it comes down to the quality of the professors, both tenured, non-tenured, and adjunct professors. And if you're hiring quality people, that's job one. I also believe that having a large number of full-time faculty members is important, insofar as that typically full-time faculty have more time to spend on campus, involved in the day-to-day activities of both the college and the lives of the students. I've served as an adjunct professor at many universities. I value adjuncts, but I also value that there's something very special about being able to interact Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday with a professor. So in the last 2 years, the last two consecutive years, we've hired 16 new tenure-track faculty members each year. And I think that that's indicative of the commitment of Iona College to have full-time tenure-track professors. We also have a large number of adjuncts like your wife. And again, high-quality adjuncts are part of, a vital part of higher education. And so I think that, again, hiring very high-quality professors is number one. But secondly, I do value and see a purpose for and a commitment to hiring full-time professors.
You mentioned game development. My son is the screenwriter out of NYU and has done work in the Los Angeles area for 20 years. He's now involved in game development and writing scripts just as he was for screenplays, and that's a very hot item. So
That and yes. cybersecurity, two very, very growth areas for both the greater New York City region, but across the country. Absolutely.
You've also on your tenure entered into a number of partnerships, one with SingSort, one with ESPN. Could you tell us about those?
Those partnerships are a win-win. First, the partnership with SingSort is part of the Startup New York initiative, whereby companies can relocate to New York or launch. You can launch a company in New York, and if you partner with a university or a college, there's the tax benefits to incentivize, again, job creation. So SingSort is a large company that's creating 144 jobs on our Rockland campus and making a significant investment in New York, and that will provide our students internships, field placement experiences, field study experiences in their classrooms as it relates to big data, and our focus in that area out of the Hagen School of Business. So the largest private partnership under Startup New York at the time and recently announced, and again, a win-win for the state of New York, for Rockland County, for SingSort, but especially for the students of Iona College. Another similar partnership is with ESPN. We just announced that late December and here in January, where the college partnered with ESPN, and we, beginning February 5th, will be producing ESPN games, and our students will have the experience of both producing and providing the timeout takeaways and some of the halftime content for ESPN. It also will put more Iona games for Iona fans across the country and across the globe to witness the strong athletics of the college. So, again, this is an opportunity for the college to be seen by more people. It's an opportunity for students to learn how to produce ESPN-quality content and to really augment their mass communication experience here at Iona. So two strong partnerships that are examples of the types of things that I believe colleges should be doing to ensure both their vitality and a robust experience for students. So those are two of many new partnerships or new centers and new institutes that the college has launched just in the last 2 to 3 years, and these two in the last 6 months.
You mentioned the Rockland campus. There was no Rockland campus when I was at Iona, and I believe that came about as due to the purchase of Elizabeth Seton Two-Year School. What is at the Rockland campus now?
Our Hagen graduate programs are at the Rockland campus, and then we also offer classes at Rockefeller Center in mass communication. So in addition to the main campus here in New Rochelle, we offer business graduate programs in Rockland on our Rockland campus, and we offer mass communication courses at, of course, Rockefeller Center, which is a wonderful place to offer courses in communications. So two things, the two locations that weren't there when that weren't here when you were studying.
Iona is a much different place than when I attended. Then it was an all-male commuter school. And one of the fellows that I rode to school with 1 year was Joe Murphy, who became one of the most generous benefactors of Iona for years, and the present science building bears his name. This year, however, marked the largest gift to Iona in 75 years. Please tell us about that.
Well, first I want to thank the Murphys. Mrs. Murphy, Joanne Murphy, serves on our Board of Trustees to this date, and Joe is a board member emeritus and attends meetings from time to time. Very generous, supportive people. The college was very fortunate to receive its largest gift in history as part of our largest fundraising campaign in history. Mr. Bob LaPenta has donated more than $15 million towards the construction of a new school of business, which would nearly triple the square footage of our business building. And we announced the gift of $15 million in November. And since then, we're pleased to announce that Mr. LaPenta has donated another $2.5 million in the form of a challenge to our alumni base, that he'll match gifts for the business school up to an additional $2.5 million. So that brings his commitment to the new school of business to $17.5 million, and for Iona College, that's two gifts in a row that are the largest in history, the $15 million, and then taking it to $17.5 million. And again, that's part of our investment in learning environments and in the future of the college. And we're so very grateful to Mr. LaPenta, and he's grateful and appreciative of all the brothers and all the faculty and what they meant to him in starting his very successful career. And he's so generous to give back to the college in this way.
Yeah, I remember with Joe, he was asked why he was so generous to Iona, and his line was payback time. And that was because that he owed so much to the Irish Christian Brothers, both at Rice High School and at Iona. He had an interesting background. I don't know if you knew about it. He went to Iona for 1 year on a scholarship that was funded by the fellow that owned the Italian newspaper and also Confidential, the National Enquirer. And the funds ran out at the end of the year. So Joe joined the Marine Corps. And when he came back from the Marine Corps, he went to Iona on what was then the GI Bill. So it was an interesting back and forth, similar to you going in, as you mentioned, to the Navy and then going to college.
Well, we're grateful that so many of our alums, like the Murphys, like the LaPenta, the Hines, Aragonis, the Kellys, so many of our alums are so supportive. We announced a $150 million fundraising campaign in September on the 75th anniversary of the college, and we've raised nearly $70 million of that goal to date. This is the largest campaign in the college's history, and it's off to a very strong start because of the generosity of so many leading alums. That campaign is focused exclusively on ensuring that we have great learning environments, that we have immense scholarship support for students like Joe Murphy that you referred to, and also endowing our professors that are so very talented. So a campaign focused principally on growing our endowment and on the academic excellence of the institution. And I look forward to 4 short years from now when we'll have raised over $150 million and what that means by way of the transformation of the college.
Is this the campaign you're referring to as the Iona Forever campaign?
Iona Forever. And we think about it that way for many reasons. We're trying to form the college for the next 75 years and for the next 5 years. And by tripling our endowment, it's gone from 50 to 100 million. This campaign will double that endowment again and also ensure that we're able to build some of the key learning environments like the new School of Business to make sure the college is well positioned for all that may come. So Iona Forever is the name of the campaign, and it's a $150 million campaign focused on students, on faculty, and key learning environments of the campus.
Oh. We spoke briefly about technology before. Now, with the expansion of the colleges to various both locations within New Rochelle and to remote locations like Rockland and New York City, does the infrastructure now support them all? Are they all tied together? Is everything?
Yeah, all the campuses are tied together. And Iona was one of the early adopters of being an entirely wireless campus as well. You know, students are great consumers of technology, and as is the case at most universities, our students are very involved with helping us understand how better to meet their needs each semester and each year. So our technology budget seems to grow each year, but I think that that's in part indicative of the society in which we live. But thankfully, we've been able to not only keep up with that, but I think in many ways be ahead of the curve in ensuring that our students have the best technology and the best learning environments so that they can be prepared for all that comes in their future.
Iona coexists in New Rochelle with two other colleges, the College of New Rochelle and Monroe College. Is there a working relationship in any areas among the colleges or with the colleges in the city?
There's a working relationship as part of a collaborative with Lower Hudson Valley Consortium of Catholic Colleges, of which CNR has been a member.
And those groups come together to share resources among CFOs, to have joint purchasing power, to work on joint curricular ventures, and really, you know, to benefit from all that each institution brings to the table. I know that as part of New Rochelle's redevelopment plans, the downtown New Rochelle redevelopment project, that all three colleges have been very involved and will continue to be involved in trying to support New Rochelle. So I'm pleased with both the relationships in the Lower Hudson Valley, and I'm also pleased with how the three colleges work with the city of New Rochelle to try to make New Rochelle as vibrant, as forward-looking, and as successful as possible.
You've been in many locations in your academic career. What do you find different, if you can pinpoint it, in the Iona New Rochelle atmosphere from your previous location than situations?
The people. I set foot on Iona's campus anonymously, and I walked up to the security guard before they knew I was a candidate to become the 8th president. And the first person I met was the security guard, and he was so welcoming and so proud of Iona, and talked about where I should go to see the best parts of the campus and the library and the student union and Spelman Hall. And then I talked to other people on campus, from faculty to the men and women who make the grounds so beautiful, and all of them were focused on student success. And I called my wife, Kelly, and I said, I think this might be the place. Every college has a great mission statement, as does Iona, but you don't know until you arrive at the college if it lives its mission. And I can tell you that from my first experience on our campus to now being president, and when we welcome you back, as we did recently, that you feel it on the campus, you see it in the people. They're focused on the mission. And I think that's why I'm here, and that's something that strikes me as being very unique about the college, something that I'm very proud of, and I want to make sure stays in the marrow of the institution.
My wife was a tough for 2 years between stints at Marist College, and we co-located for that time, and the whole Boston area is just one big college town. That's a very interesting area too.
So did she become a Red Sox fan while she was up at Tufts, or were you able to keep her
focused
on New York?
But what happened was, my mother was what was known as a townie. She was from Charleston. And I picked up from the relatives when I was young some of the terminology. And whenever we'd cross the Massachusetts border, I started ordering chowder, and I started talking about Boston, and my wife would say, stop that. One of the complaints that we often hear about higher education is its cost. I know there are many factors in the cost: escalating salaries, administrative overhead, faculty maintenance. I rarely hear the cost of technology innovation mentioned, by the way. Is the criticism warranted? And if so, what can be done about it?
I think both the criticism is warranted, but sometimes misplaced. Another factor in the cost of higher education is the amount of federal regulations that rise every year. So there are many things that are driving the cost of higher education. I'm very concerned. I think that the criticism is warranted. I'm very concerned about the cost of higher education. And I'm invested, as is our campus, as part of our strategic plan to make Iona more affordable. The question is, how do you do that while ensuring you're making the investments in faculty, in health insurance, in regulatory compliance, in campus assets, in technology, the things that are essential? And we believe there are a number of things that a college can do, and we're in the midst of doing those. One is increase the speed of degree attainment. So, for example, at Iona, you can come and you can participate in a 4-1 program and attain an undergraduate and graduate degree in 5 years or less. We want students to graduate undergrad in at least 4, if not fewer, years. That reduces the cost of attending. So taking summer courses and courses over the winter break, certainly part of the formula to reduce the cost of higher education. We also have to curb tuition increases. So for the 4 years that I've set a budget at Iona, I'll be working with the college to set a budget in my 5th year now, we've seen a decrease in the size of our tuition increases. Now, it's not decreasing fast enough, but it is a conscious effort of our faculty and our staff to curb the cost. John, I'm pleased to tell you that your wife is part of a faculty that 3 years ago voted to put student scholarships above their pay raises. Remarkable. Now, thankfully, we didn't have to do that, but it's a testament to our faculty who voted to put students first. So we've been increasing, in addition to curbing the cost, we've been increasing scholarships. This year we gave away $47 million in scholarships to students, again, to try to make Iona more affordable to students that need the assistance. So both by merit and by need, we've been trying to offer more aid, which brings me back to the fundraising campaign. One-third of that campaign is for student scholarships, to endow scholarships that will be there forever for students. So how do we curb costs? Well, we trim our belts. We try to drive down the size of tuition increases. We increase the speed of degree attainment. And we try to raise more funds to provide scholarships for students who then can go on to benefit from Iona and hopefully, like you, pay it forward someday, like Mr. LaPenta, like Mr. Murphy.
Just as the you mentioned the history of our Christian Brothers earlier, and we're talking about cost, the high school that I went to, All Hallows, an Irish Christian Brothers school in the city, is according to their literature, it's in the lowest income congressional district in the United States. And in the last 10 years, 100% of their graduating senior class have been accepted into four-year colleges. And the tuition, the base tuition, is higher than the average income in the area, and much of it is sustained by graduates and by grants and everything. And I just think that's indicative of at least the tradition of the Christian Brothers. I think that was terrific.
It's absolutely remarkable, and I think it's absolutely consistent with the mission and history of the Christian Brothers and what they've been able to do. And as the only Irish Christian Brothers college, I think we follow in that same trajectory, that over 30% of our incoming freshmen this year, John, were Pell Grant recipients, which means that they're, on average, the median family income is a little less than $40,000 a year. How do we ensure those students can afford to go to Iona College? Through those various mechanisms I outlined, and keeping a focus on raising the funds necessary to make college accessible and affordable, and then therefore attainable. It changes lives. Again, it changed my life forever, and I know it changed yours, and it changed the lives of so many others. That's what we have to stay focused on accomplishing, making it accessible and attainable, and having these young men and women go on to achieve greatness after they leave Iona College.
The aforementioned Dennis Murray has been president of Marist for over 35 years, then the ex-president of the Westchester Community College. Joseph Hankin was in his position for 40 years. Do you see yourself at Iona for a similar long haul?
Well, I serve at the pleasure of the board, but I got to be honest with you, and I've said this to our faculty too, that I think it's very rare that colleges can be so successful with a single leader for that many years. It's atypical. It's the exception to the rule. And if you're making change and if you're working to do all that needs to be done for a college, it's probably likely that, or high probability that at least every 10 years you're going to see a new president at a private college, if not sooner. And so I'm a realist about those things. I'm focused on our strategy. I'm focused on our comprehensive fundraising campaign. And I also recognize part of my job is to ensure that when my time is through at Iona, whenever that may be, hopefully many years into the future, that Iona is a place that's attracting much better talent than they attracted when they attracted me. That's my goal.
I think that when the Brothers had it, that it was the same as the term of Superior House, with the 6-year term, and in most cases they did 2 terms. So, but I don't know whether that's obviously changed with lay contracts.
Some of our brother presidents serve 3 years, some serve 6, and then you had Brother Driscoll and Brother Liguori serve a significant number of years, each of those men. But again, that's the exception to the rule these days. But I'm very pleased. I'm not trying to send a signal to our faculty. I'm just a realist that about every 10 years you see institutions change leadership, and I think that's healthy. I think that ensures that that a fresh focus and fresh energy are brought to new challenges and you know, setting an even greater course than one would have imagined if they had stayed in the position too long.
Well, we've touched on the number of both short-term things and longer-term goals. Are there any other the long-term goals for the college that we haven't spent time with?
We have a number of long-term goals. One, we're looking to grow our enrollment, to grow our academic distinction, to improve the student experience. We think our students have a great student experience now, but we want to ensure that that continues to elevate. We also know that we have some logistical challenges as it relates to athletics that we're looking to overcome. You know this because you're an alum, but Iona College has one of the top cross-country programs in the country in all of Division I athletics. We have a top-tier basketball program, top-tier athletics, and we don't have the facilities needed to support those endeavors. So long-term, we're focused on making significant improvements in our academic portfolio, our academic distinction, our student distinction, and also acquiring and building the facilities that will bring us well into the future. So those are some of the areas that keep us so very focused and keep us getting up early in the morning and have us going to bed late at night.
It's interesting to mention track. The fellow from the class of 60, who's a good friend, he lives on the West Coast. He's an ex-ABC producer. Frank Malone was on the track team that won the ICA 4A's back then, and he went away to the more recent thing a few years ago. They were held in Seattle, and someone said, "Would you go to school?" And he just mentioned Iona College, and they say, "Oh yeah, you won the ICA 4A's." So they still remembered it, you know. And he thought that was great.
2 years ago, the fastest female cross country runner in the United States was Kate Avery. She won the national championship, the number one runner in the country, and she was in Iona College. So our men and women cross-country programs are top tier. You know, they're racing with the Wisconsins and the Colorados and the Stanfords, Oregon, et cetera, and placing at least in the top 10, if not the top 5. And that year she was number one in the country. Remarkable.
The greatest basketball player, in my judgment, though, that came out of Iona and graduated a few years ahead of me getting to school, Richie Guerin. Have you been able to keep him involved in the school at all?
Mr. Guerin, Richie Guerin's become even more involved in the college. We retired his jersey, I think, about 2 years ago. Some people argued it was the only jersey we've ever retired in the history of the college. We've had some great basketball players. Some people argued you should never retire a jersey. Other people argued we waited too long. All I know is that I was very pleased to welcome Mr. Guerin and his family to campus to retire that jersey. And at halftime of that game, our students not only gave him a standing ovation, but they all chanted Richie Guerin. And he's very involved with the college. He's a top 10 New York Knick. Most importantly, he's a great man. And what we can't claim his accomplishments, those are his. We're certainly proud of him, and we're proud about how he went on to live his life. And he's still a great golfer to this day. He golfs his age, and so his athleticism hasn't left him. It's persisted, and it's manifested now on the golf course.
He went to Mount St. Michael High School, and my wife used to be on the board of the school. And at one time, he held the Garden scoring record. He had 57 points, which for the Knicks, not for Iona, and it was broken later, years later, by Bernard King, and others of younger generation, they might say that Jeff Rulin's the number one ball player at Iona. He was a good pro too, that had his career cut short by feet problems.
Well, and I think if you've asked Dave Brown, he might give you another answer, right, on who the best basketball player of all time is. You know, and I tease you because Dave's on our board, and he's also was a great, great basketball player.
Okay.
And he played under Jim Valvano, as you recall. So Iona has a long lineage, long history of great basketball. And
Jimmy V was one of the most energetic people I've ever met. I was working. There was a luncheon when I was working for Morgan Stanley. I was in our Uptown office, and there was an I owned the luncheon that another fellow worked for. That Morgan for me. I went, "Why don't you come to this with me?" So I go to this, and I'm going out to the men's room. That I meet him passing me, and he stops. "Jim Valvano, how are you?" And she's checking my hand, and I mentioned to him that I have sent a kid up there on scholarship, Hawaii, had played ball in an open league with. And he said, "Oh, what a great kid he is, and he's terrific, and he's wonderful, and thank you so much." And then he went on his way. Now, when I sent up this fellow, Gene Roberti, well, first, Jimmy McDermott offered him the scholarship, but he was drafted before, so he went in the Army for 2 years. Then he played under Gene Roberti, and he started the second half of his freshman year. He was the star his sophomore and his junior year. He was co-captain of the team in his junior and his senior year, but his senior year was under Jimmy V. And Jimmy V brought all these higher-level guys in. This fellow hardly played at all, but Jimmy was so praiseworthy of him. You know, what an attitude he has. He's terrific. And his energy just mobilized me. He was a very interesting person.
Oh. Very interesting person that, as we all know, left Iona for NC State and went on to win the national championship. Again, back to the lineage, a remarkable lineage of great success coming out of Iona College.
And died too young. And
died too young. He gave the famous speech. We have the Jimmy V Fund, and he's gone on to give after his death to ensure that the country stays focused, and he was relentless in his life and was certainly relentless in his final year.
Yeah. We've touched a lot of bases tonight. What else might you like the audience to know about Joseph Nyer?
Well, not so much about me necessarily, but other than we're so focused at this college on advancing Iona and advancing the lives of young men and women. People might not know that Iona College has the only Thomas Paine Institute in higher education, Thomas Paine being such an instrumental part of the American Revolution. We have the Center for Financial Market Studies at Iona College, so many centers and institutes. We're growing by way of international students and international programs. And what I'm most proud of is that students at Iona College know one another, their faculty know them and are involved in their lives, and are invested in their futures. It reminds me of the story of John Kennedy, where he was walking through the space station and he walked up to the custodian and said, "Hi, I'm John Kennedy, what are you doing?" And he said, "Mr. President, I'm helping put a man on the moon." And JFK knew at that point that everybody was living the mission to get to the moon. At Iona College, whether you interact with a faculty who attends to the beauty of the mind or attend with someone that's working on the campus grounds, attending to the beauty of the grounds, every single person on this campus is here to inspire students to come to Iona, to be successful while they're at Iona College, and to help them graduate to go on to do great things in the world in the spirit of the Christian Brothers. And I think that's something that every chance I get the opportunity to share it, it's important for me, your listeners, to know that that's what defines Iona College. That's the experience you had. That's the experience I'm having, and that's the experience that our students are having every day. So I'd welcome your listeners, anytime they're in New Rochelle, to come to our campus. The doors are open. You'll be welcomed by our security. You'll be welcomed by the men and women of Iona College. Please come get to know us a little bit more. I think you'll be impressed, and it's a very, very special place.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Nyer. It's been a real pleasure.
It's been a pleasure being with you, John. I look forward to seeing you on campus in the near future.
Okay. A bit of commercial information. My column now appears bi-weekly in West of the Guardian, along with regular columns by Congressperson, co-chair of the 9/11 Commission, and recent recipient of the Medal of Freedom, Lee Hamilton. of critic John Simon and others. Voices of the Guardian is available in print format and online at www.voicesofguardian.com. My books are available at Amazon, and I blog at johnmack13.johnmackrants.com. Send any comments or questions to me at johnmack13@gmail.com. And in the words of Mets radio announcer Howie Rose after a Mets win, put it in a book. Go to my website, www.johnmack13, for the URLs of previous shows and schedules of upcoming shows. And the next week will be singer-songwriter, musician Greg Gilliam Jr. And until then, as they say in the old neighborhood, see ya. Whoa, silver, steady. Good night, everybody. I also away an episode.